This week, Massachusetts Education Commissioner Jeff Riley requested that school districts across the Commonwealth wait until early August to let parents know what reopening will look like for this upcoming school year. Schools were instructed to be ready with three possible approaches: all remote, all in person, and a hybrid of the two. Now, opinions vary widely and strongly about which is most preferable for students, families, and teachers. So let's talk about it. Are you a parent or teacher? What do you want to see happen this fall? Are you ready for reopening? And if so, what kind? And what are your biggest concerns? Let's have a conversation. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So joining us to have this conversation are teachers from two different Massachusetts school districts. We have Samantha Camara, is a history and social studies teacher at Amherst Regional High School. Sam, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Shantae Alves, who teaches pre-K inclusion at Young Achievers in Mattapan. Shantae, welcome to you too.
Thank you so much, Tiziana.
And I just want to double check. I think I have said both Shantae and Shantae, so which is it?
It's Shantae. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Yep. All right. So as I just mentioned, we don't officially know what reopening will look like this fall yet. How difficult has it been for you two to prepare for a new school year that's not too far away now, not knowing whether it will be in person, a hybrid, remote? How has that been? Both of you can just jump in.
Okay. Sure. I'm happy to speak. You know, I think as we think about the health implications, it's very complex. So it's fraught, it's full of anxiety. And, you know, functioning as a teacher and preparing for the fall is really hard to begin with. And when you add all of these possible options, it's essentially triples the challenge for us.
I agree with Samantha. Honestly, it's hard to prepare for something that you're not quite sure what it will look like. It's put a stall on certain ways that I typically prepare for the upcoming school year. And that can sometimes cause stress. So I'm trying my best to just get as much information as possible, but also advocate for a realistic plan.
Now, Shantae, you teach pre-K, and yes. I have to imagine that if there's an in-the-classroom component this fall, that is going to be really challenging. What would that even look like, given our needs for social distancing and concerns about touching shared objects, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. So I don't even know if challenging is the word, because I think we often as teachers take on challenges every day. I think it'll be very risky. And it also wouldn't be fair. So I teach, like you said, I teach pre-K inclusion. I teach 4 and 5 year olds. And in my classroom, I am big on play. I'm big on interaction, modeling. If we have to socially distance, if we have masks on, if we cannot share manipulatives, that decreases the chance of me to effectively, you know, teach readiness skills, social skills to my students, especially those on IEPs. And I am not comfortable with that, because that should not be their first interaction with school. You know, school should be as engaging and as social as possible. And for me to have to pretty much be like a dictator saying, you cannot do this, you cannot do that, you cannot share, which is one of our, you know, values in the classroom, that has me very, very not, I don't even know if the word is upset, but it has me very disappointed in the fact that this is what some people are thinking is okay for 4 and 5 year olds.
And Sam, you teach high school. I have high schoolers, really different needs, different approach. What sorts of challenges are you facing in terms of implementing the state safety guidelines if there's a hybrid model or an in-person model this fall?
Yes. I mean, I think if you ask me, the in-person model has too many health implications and it doesn't make sense. The mm-hmm. hybrid model has notable challenges. We would have to revert to teacher-centered pedagogy, right? Which means we lose our project-based learning. We lose all of our best practices, right? We have to be 6 feet away. We have to have masks. We have to face forward. We can't share any materials. We can't use small groups. You know, we don't necessarily have the enforcement mechanisms to manage possible behavioral issues as well. right? So how do we manage the buses? How do we manage a kid who decides to take their mask off? Or what if they take the mask off on the way to the bathroom or in the bathroom or passing periods? And, you know, I think Shantae is right. We sort of become disciplinarians. And that's not what I signed up for. Right. I think we're going to lose, you know, kids would lose freedom of movement. One-to-one help becomes less feasible, right? I'm all of a sudden a health monitor and a disinfector, as opposed to an educator, you know, and then the question becomes what happens if COVID is contracted, right? How do we trace it? Do we have substitutes? Do we have adequate testing, right? So there's tons of questions about that hybrid model that are emerging.
So there's a couple threads I want to pick up on there, but before I do, let's go to the phone, start bringing in our caller voices, and do call in 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Is it realistic to ask kids to socially distance, wear masks, and focus on learning? Has the state done enough to provide guidance to schools? Are you worried about what kids lose when they're not in a shared learning environment or a physical classroom environment? Give us a call. We've got Ashley on the line from Salem. Ashley, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I first and foremost want to say we all as educators know the benefits of our children being in school. We all want that, but the safety and the health of everyone involved is what's disconcerting to all of us. So my question is, how does sick time work for teachers? So I'm sorry, I'm nervous.
You're doing fine, Ashley.
Say I get sick or someone in my classroom gets sick. I have to take 2 weeks to quarantine. How does that work in terms of sick time? Because maternity leave in a school setting works off of sick time. So if I am pregnant or trying to get pregnant and then need to take sick time later in the year and I've used up all of my sick time, which I'm then depending on for maternity leave, and then what about a new teacher who has an accrued sick time? How does that work for that new teacher? Something really important.
Thank you for those questions, Ashley. I appreciate it. And I want to turn back to our panelists now to give them a chance to talk about them. Shantae, maybe you can start.
Sure. So I don't know much about how the district or the state plans on handling that, but I do know that that would not be fair to teachers to ask us to use sick time when we're being forced to go back to school. And I think that that is why the remote learning right now seems the best option. It is the best option right now because we know that students can be at home with their masks off and they can be with their family and get supported as best as possible. And they're not being put at risk. Teachers are not being put at risk because not only was that a great question by Ashley about sick time, but say she wants to say she is pregnant and then contracts it and then brings it home. And who knows who else might. It just so many other people can get it just from her being in a classroom. And that is not fair to the students and it's not fair to the teachers.
So we've had some conversation now. We heard from Ashley and from both of you some real concerns about what would happen if we were in a hybrid model or in an all-in-person model this fall. For this segment, we also spoke with Avin Lewis, president of the Lexington Education Association, a science teacher at Lexington Public Schools. Lexington is actually pushing for a hybrid model this fall. She talked about some of the benefits of the hybrid model because of some of the benefits of classroom learning. Let's listen.
You know, a teacher during an hour of class might wander around the room and have 15-second, 30-second interactions with 25 kids. And each one of those interactions, moments of encouragement, little bits of feedback, those kind of things, those are happening constantly during the class.
So, Sam, let me just start by asking you if you agree. Do you agree that those little moments are happening constantly and are valuable and important interactions in learning for kids?
Yes, they're absolutely constant. But I can sit here and sort of honestly tell you that I think we can have all of those moments remotely, right? So I can hold office hours. I can do asynchronous learning for flexibility. I can do synchronous learning for connections. So there are tons of ways to have those moments. It does require you know, larger support from districts. You know, back to the health concerns. Is the medical implication more significant than those moments? I would say yes. I would say the impact on, you know, on the people of color is far greater than white folks. And so I worry about racial injustice, and I worry about, you know, people of color carrying the burden of that injustice and contracting COVID at higher rates. And so those moments, we can have those moments. They don't need to be in person. In this case, if I'm choosing life or death, which it feels like to me, that's what I'm choosing. Right. It doesn't need to be in person. I think frankly, walking around the classroom one-on-one help is less feasible. I have to stand 6 feet away. If someone has something private they need to say to me, it's not possible. The whole room's going to hear it.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got lots of calls coming in. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Fred is on the line from 495. What's on your mind, Fred?
Yeah, I'm calling as both a parent and a teacher. I teach high school, and my kids are teenagers, but not where I work. And I'm very worried about, as a parent, I want them to go back. And as a teacher, I want them to go back. And as a parent and a teacher, I don't want them to go back. I have immune compromised family members, and I'm very worried about if I go back and I'm surrounded by 1,500 students, even if it's hybrid and some come in one day and some come in another day, I'm still going to be exposed to all those students. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's as easy as just, you know, flicking the switch. And even if it's hybrid or in person, and I definitely have major concerns about remote learning. I think it's a complete failure, even as hard as I and my coworkers have tried. You spend more time chasing people, and you just can't put a price tag or any type of thought on the in-person importance of education. You just can't.
Fred,
that's really all.
Thank you
for
that call. I appreciate it. And I do want to note that my chuckle was not dismissiveness, just what an encapsulation of the rock and the hard place that it seems we're all finding ourselves in. Shantae, I want to give you a chance to react to Fred.
Yes, because honestly, I understand, just as a teacher, I can understand the concern both parents and other teachers have. However, something that I have to bring up, he did address that, you know, he spent a lot of time chasing students. And I wholeheartedly believe that if we all put in the work for family engagement, we will have our students showing up to remote learning. I had that same situation where I had 12 out of 15 students every day in my classroom. Some days they all came. And that was because of family engagement. That was because my families cared, the students cared, and they showed up. And so I honestly think that how you address something, the way you frame it and how you think about it, totally affects the way in which you are able to conquer it. And so I believe that if we put a strong effort into family engagement, district schools, teachers, we will see students showing up because they will understand that this is the best option that keeps them safe, that keeps everyone safe, and this still allows them to get their learning time in.
I want to pick up on the other thread of Fred's call because he talked about his immune deficiency and his own risks associated with being in school or having kids coming home from school. Here is Avon Lewis again, president of the Lexington Education Association, a science teacher at Lexington Public Schools, talking about health concerns on behalf of teachers and staff.
I mean, there's an awful lot of adults in schools. 25% of our teachers nationally are over 50. And a lot of our teachers have complicating health factors, and normally that's not an issue, right? We have a lot of teachers who work quite happily until they're 70, and they do a great job, and they love working with little kids. But this is not normal times.
You know, when the impact of the pandemic was first being felt, Sam, we heard debates about risk for healthcare workers versus patient care in the healthcare community. Some people in those debates argued, hey, this is what healthcare workers signed up for. Not everyone agreed with that framing, but I was thinking back to that today and thinking, in the context of schools, what do we think teachers signed up for? And how does that play in? I mean, we're talking about the kinds of trade-offs between teacher safety and student learning needs. How do we even think about positing such trade-offs?
Ooh, great question. That's a hard one.
Yes.
Well, I think I'll just start by saying, you know, our union did a really good job of surveying faculty, and they got 83% faculty members are very concerned about returning. And that was sort of a 50% union response rate, which is pretty good. You know, I signed on to do hands-on projects, to teach research skills, to have innovative podcasts and small group projects and simulations. And I definitely did not sign on to be a health monitor and someone that should be disinfecting desks and using all of my spare time to make sure kids are following the rules. Again, we just don't have these enforcement mechanisms. So I really do believe that there are a lot of merits associated with distance learning that we have to pay attention to. We need time to prepare, right? That the spring was tricky. It was a stopgap measure, right? I think our district did an unbelievable job, you know, getting equipment and access for all. And so we, and food for all, as a matter of fact. So we did a really good job with that. But again, I definitely did not sign up for this decision, certainly.
So Sam, in listening to you, so I mentioned earlier, I have high schoolers, and I was hearing you talk about, I didn't sign up to be disinfecting things and being a health monitor. So I was listening to that and thinking, I have to admit, as a parent, I guess I'm assuming that even as we get into the phase where we have a vaccination, that's just going to be the way it is now. So how, I mean, eventually,
yes,
won't we all, yes, wind up back in schools, and won't you still have to do those things? Will that be part of the new normal?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think we have a lot to learn here. I also have two high schoolers. So I'm actually at the crux of this decision. I've got a rising ninth grader and a rising senior. And so, yes, absolutely. And as teachers, it is our job to monitor the sort of health and safety and report things as needed and attend to all of their needs. So that I did sign up for, but I didn't sign up for a decision associated, you know, a decision like this. And it may be the new normal. I agree with you. And I think it could, you know, help us in the end to really invest in digital learning, right? And so you're right. I imagine we will be monitoring all of this and it will have to change. But I think maybe those guidelines can come from DESE. Maybe those guidelines can come from our state, and our administration will have to engage in what is the new normal. Yeah.
Let's see if I can add on to that. Yeah, please do. Shantae, please. So I am a pre-K teacher, so I kind of signed up to do those things, to disinfect and to clean up after students, and I'm okay with that. However, I also signed up to give my students the least restrictive environment as an inclusion teacher. And so to ask me to then have them sit so far apart where they can barely hear the sounds that are coming out of my mouth. They cannot see the way I'm forming my lips to know the difference between the sound that M makes and the sound that N makes. That is not fair to their learning. So I did not sign up to give them a learning experience that may hinder their growth as a learner, as a scholar. And so I don't mind disinfecting. I don't mind doing those things. However, this virus is not the flu. It's not, you know, a cough or a sneeze on my arm that I can just go over to the sink and wash off. This is something that can kill people. And so that is what we, Samantha and I, both agree that we didn't sign up for, is to put ourselves and others at risk.
So we have a lot of calls that I'm not going to be able to get to, and callers, I am sorry for that. Obviously, this is a conversation we want to continue to have. I am going to paraphrase one of our callers' questions just briefly. We have a caller, Jessica from Lynn, who was saying that Jessica teaches high schoolers with severe autism and online learning doesn't work for them. So just briefly, how are we thinking about students for whom the online system may fail them? Sam, I heard you.
I think that's, I'm a high school teacher and I'm thinking about that as well. You know, I think we have to be flexible. We have to think about populations that need extra support. And there are a lot of people in this category. And I think we need to create some academic spaces for all. And so for some, those academic spaces probably do need to be in person. And I think that we need to be able to accommodate that. So I agree with this teacher, and I think that there need to be some safe spaces for that. And as we think about creating academic spaces for all, you know, I think that has to include that population of people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In our last couple of minutes, I think what I want to ask each of you is, what is the most important thing that you want people to walk away from this conversation thinking about or understanding? The people who've been listening today, what do you want them to think about and understand? Shantae.
So many things. I think I want them to understand that, one, the coronavirus is real. Two, we currently don't have a budget that would support all the needs that we would have to implement in order to keep everyone with the minimal risk in schools. I'm not quite sure if that would even be possible, if we would be able to have that kind of funding and consistent funding all year to make sure that we are not contracting the virus. But I will say this, I guarantee you that teachers who want to be in the classroom and who are able to be in the classroom will be in the classroom. For example, myself, someone who is not married and I don't have kids, so I'm not coming home and I'm infecting others if I say were to contract it. Those might be the routes we need to take in asking, polling our teachers and saying, hey, would you be willing? Do you have an immunocompromised individual at home? Are you in immunocompromised? Like, that may be the route we need to take, thinking of inclusion and of our students who are on IEPs and might need that in-person setting. However, we cannot force all teachers to go back. We cannot force all students to go back, because that is just unfair. It's not equitable, and it wouldn't be safe for everyone.
And Sam, in our last 30 seconds or so, what would you add?
Shantae, that was excellent. I think the health implications are significant here. All of the choices we have in front of us are brand new. And I think we have to think very carefully. We need to think about the virus and how it's being aerosolized. We have to think about the possible damage to human life, neurology and lungs and death. I think that's central. I think in the end, yes, people should probably have choice, students and faculty, whether or not to go in. But choice is what really matters here. And I think Shantae said that really beautifully.
And that's Samantha Camara, history and social studies teacher at Amherst High School, and Shantae Alves, pre-K inclusion teacher at Young Achievers in Mattapan. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.